Welcome, my fellow wannabes. Welcome to another edition of The Wannabe Critic. As you can see, the podcast setup is full in full effect. It's gone full tilt, as the kids say. Today, I am joined to my left, on my screen, it's to my left, Mikey Collins, who is furiously trying to get his notes together for the show. And down below, Ethan Maestri of Age of Geek has joined us. How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right this evening.
Very nice. Very, very nice. Very cool. Well, as you can tell by the title, the subject matter of this video is one that I have to come out and say, I got this idea from a tweet that I saw from the guys over at Kinda Funny. They said this particular thing is the best cinematic blockbuster moment of all time. And I thought about it and I'm like, they're right. So that made me think of, like, that'd be a dope podcast, and it might be a good one to put on YouTube, of our top five best blockbuster moments. Now, here are the rules, and you watching, you can do whatever you want, obviously, but I mean, to me, anything that I consider a blockbuster, I'm thinking, like, of your popcorn movie, you know, the movie that's designed to sell a lot of tickets, you know, the movie that's like big and bombastic and things like that. To me, that's what's defined as a blockbuster. Could be wrong. Ethan, you're more wise than I. Would you say that's an accurate description?
Yeah, I would say so.
Okay, nice. Very good, good. I concur. Mikey, no one cares what you think. Just kidding, man. Just kidding.
Oh. Seeing that he came unprepared.
Yeah. It's okay.
Back-to-back podcast. What are you going to do?
We just got done doing another podcast over at The Wannabe Critic, which, if this is your first time here, consider subscribing. This is a format of a show that we do quite often. You know, every once in a while, we'll record our podcast and put it up on the YouTube channel. So you can subscribe to us pretty much on any other platform. I mean, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, obviously. If you haven't subscribed already, please do consider it at least, and check us out on the podcast platforms, because there's lots of things we talk about there that we're not talking about here. But today, this is what we're talking about. No edits, no cuts. It's uncut, ready to go. So, first of all, I'd like to say that this list, I'm actually pretty proud of my list, to be honest. I kind of surprised myself even with a couple of my picks, because I really thought hard about this for a couple of days. So I'm interested to see what you all's picks are, and Ethan's laughing about something, but
you've thought about it for days. You dropped it on us like yesterday.
Yeah.
So yep.
Yeah.
Here we sit.
Yeah.
With an inferior product.
Listen, you're the podcasting guru. You're the one who's podcasted for a long time. This should be like old hat for you. You should be able to just throw something together. No problem. Oh.
I sat down last night and put it all together.
Good.
And yeah, I'm confident in my list, but I know it's probably not going to be, you know, Joe listener out there is probably going to be like, why in the heck would he pick that?
Very nice. Very nice. Well, I figure we might as well just get right into it. Cause I mean, I feel like these picks could take us some time to actually get through. So Ethan, I want to throw it to you, man. What is your number five? We're going to start at the bottom of this list.
Okay. Yeah, I can go there. For number five, I kind of debated on this one. All of these, it took me a little bit of time to order them out, but I went with number five here, the conclusion of Inception. The screen goes blank, the credits begin to roll, and the question begins in your mind and is debated around the water cooler. Does the totem stop spinning? I mean, that was probably one of the most mind-blowing moments for me at the conclusion of a film, of any film in the last decade, I'd say.
That's a really, really solid pick, honestly. I love that movie. Christopher Nolan's like probably my favorite director ever. He just has such a really good way of making you feel a part of his creation and his story and really drawing you in. And Inception is one of my favorite movies ever. So I love that pick. Go ahead, Ethan.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say this movie did so much for me for Christopher Nolan films. At that point I had enjoyed the Dark Knight, the two movies of the Dark Knight series, what would be the trilogy. I had enjoyed them, but this really got me excited for Dark Knight Rises. And then everything basically that he's made since then, I've been excited to see. And yeah, this is just an absolutely fantastic film. And that moment is one of the key moments in my cinephile history, I'd say.
That's very good. I would have to agree with you on that for myself. That moment didn't make this list. I went a little more like pop music, popcorn type, you know, picks. But that definitely is one of my favorite moments in, like you said, in your cinephile catalog, whatever. That's definitely a dope pick. So very nice. Mikey, what about you, man?
Man, I'm having a hard time coming down with my number five. Because I'm trying to think of them in, like, I don't know. Because some of them are more sentimental than anything, you know?
Yeah.
So probably my number five is Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Where they realize that the whole treasure that they've been looking for is pomade the whole time. I love that so much. That Dapper Dan. I love that so much. That's so good.
That's but awesome.
That moment when they all realize that there's no treasure and they're probably about to die, you're just like, this movie's hilarious. What is happening right now for the first time you watch it? But did we mention spoilers, by the way?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, full disclosure, this is going to spoil the crap out of a bunch of movies probably. Yep. So, yeah. Hey,
both of these are over a decade old, so if you haven't seen
them yet. Yeah, if you've never seen Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, just, God. I don't even know what to say to that. If you've never seen Oh Brother, Art Thou, that's a really good pick though, Mikey. I admire that. That surprises me. Honestly, I didn't think that would come from you. Which,
yeah,
you know,
that one surprises me too. If I can just interject, I have my appreciation for Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, came about slowly, and it was more by association with other people that liked it, and then that has increased my appreciation for that movie, but. Yeah, mad respect for that one. That's a good pick, I'd say.
It is good. And it's one of those movies, too, where, like, to me, it's one of those movies, the more you quote it, the more you really, really enjoy it. And there's, like, a certain amount of movies that have come out that have done that exact same thing. It's, like, where the more you quote it, like, the better it becomes. And that's kind of Oh Brother, Where Art Thou for me. Like, it kind of fits into the same category as, like, Napoleon Dynamite in a way, or even, like, Anchorman, or, you know, a lot of these other movies that the more you quote it, the more you're like, oh, I just want to go watch it now, you know? And, yeah, props to you. Very, very good pick. Very good pick. My number five, and this is a movie I just watched the other day, actually. So I'm gonna paint the scene for you. A man has just had pretty much an entire clip emptied into him. The love of his life kisses him, wakes him up. The man who shot at him tries to empty another clip into him, but he stops the bullets with his hand because he's inside the Matrix. That scene, those three agents, the music that's playing, the switching between the ship, which the Matrix is one of the best movies of all time, has to be. And just seeing the stereotypical love story making its way into such a sophisticated movie where it's like review Sleeping Beauty pretty much. I don't know. I love that mixed with the visual of, oh my God, this guy is the one. And all of the supporting cast, they're like, Morpheus is like, oh my God. Like, it's just so sick. I love that scene. It's so good. And it definitely made my list because, I mean, I didn't really have an opinion in the 90s, to be honest with you, because I was a little kid. But that had to have been like Ethan was saying, like a water cooler moment where people are talking about this and being like, dude, holy crap. Did you see the Matrix? I mean, can you elaborate on that a little bit, Maestri?
Can I ask you a question? If someone else picks a pick that you have in your pick list, do we still get to use it or do we go to an honorable mention? Because I'm going to have to go to an honorable mention now. That is an absolutely stellar cinema moment, and it's on my list.
Really?
I'm gonna have to go to an honorable mention with that. No, I seriously, that was my thought on it as well. That music, the soundtrack crescendos at that moment, or is beginning to crescendo at that moment, and the look on the agents' faces as they realize, oh crap, we've got some trouble here.
Yeah.
and it is. It's like right now, literally the hair on the back of my neck is standing up. It's one of those chilling moments that is just absolutely great in cinema. And then the fight between Agent Smith and Neo after that.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. I mean, yeah. This is the prelude to the throwdown.
And yeah.
You're right. It is an absolute, that is a quintessential cinema moment. And yeah, definitely deserves to be on that list. I think five's a little low for a pick, but I'm curious to see what else you go with.
Yeah, I a lot of this list is made up of sentimentality. You know, it's like partially sentimentality, partially it's like I don't know. I feel like a lot of these picks go hand in hand. You know, I mean, this could have been higher on my list, but I think that there's movies that have more clout that their moments probably just deserve to be higher just based on the critical reception and the overall reception in general that they've received. So you'll see in a little bit, but yeah, I love The Matrix. I watched The Matrix Reloaded right after that. And always as a little kid, I always thought that The Matrix Reloaded was a way better movie. It's not. The Matrix is the best one out of that trilogy for sure. But anyways, if you want to argue about it, anyone, let me know. Okay. That's what I thought. No. All right. So our number four, Ethan, I'm going to throw it to you again, man.
We did go there. Number four. I had to debate on this one for a while. It was actually the first one or the last one that I came up with and actually ended up putting it in four. Charlton Heston at the conclusion of 1968's Planet of the Apes. When he and his girl are making their way along the beach at the end, away from the ape camp, and he encounters the ruins of the Statue of Liberty. Spoiler alert, by the way. And he realizes he's not on a different planet. He's been on Earth the whole time. And so that iconic, damn you, who the hell? I mean, come on, it's Charlton Heston.
Yeah.
And it's one of the, it's a little cheesy, but it's also a great, and here again, at the conclusion of the film, it's another one of those mind-blowing moments where it just kind of gets dropped on you all of a sudden, and it changes the whole aspect of everything that you saw in the 2 hours before that. And it's, you know, it's to this day, it's one of the great endings in cinema.
I had an argument with someone not too long ago about this particular movie because we were arguing, and I'm going to be talking while I'm checking my audio here just because I've been having trouble for whatever reason with Logic has been overloading my audio every once in a while, but we're good. We're still rolling. I had an argument with somebody about this particular movie, and I said, listen, the greatest cinematic twist of all time is whenever we learn that Darth Vader is Luke's father. And their argument, I said, that's the greatest cinematic twist of all time, and no one can argue that because everybody has grown up knowing that. But back in the day, you sat down at that movie, it'd have been like, oh my God, you know, how could you see that coming? But we can't think of a time where we didn't see that coming. And their argument, hold on, their argument was the one that you just said of, no, the best twist of all time is that. And go ahead.
I got to choose sides, and you're wrong. Yeah, it's definitely Planet of the Apes. Because that is the linchpin that the movie hangs on, is right there at the end. And that's why, look, Planet of the Apes is not a fantastic film. I'll be upfront about that. It's enjoyable to watch, but it's because of that last scene that makes that movie rewatchable and enjoyable. And yeah, there's a lot of other things about the production value and things like that that are good. Some of it not so good, but yeah, that scene really, in my mind, makes that movie work.
Well,
more so even than Empire, because Empire's got a lot of other things going for
it. Yeah, it's true. And I mean, there probably were people back in the day that were thinking like, oh, well, these two are connected somehow. There have to be some sort of reason, you know, that they're so connected. But you know, to each his own. I still think mine's better. Moving on to Mikey. Good pick though, Ethan. I like that pick. That's dope. Good. That's dope. I like how you have gone retro, you know. So very nice.
It's gonna keep happening.
Oh God.
Take that. I feel bad because like none of mine are like older, like not older, but you know what I mean. My number four is, I feel like this is a cop out in a way, but it's special to me because it was my introduction into a whole series of movies that I think everybody loves. There's a guy on a podium who's been dressing up as an armored soldier and nobody knows. And then they ask him, who is Iron Man? And he says, I am Iron Man. Damn. Love that so much.
Yeah.
That's probably, if I had to think of a, no, yeah. Yeah. That's a good number four for me, for sure. There's several others, but I love it.
That's a respectable pick. And honestly, yeah. that moment is amazing. I mean, especially how they do just, it would not work. Hear me out here. It would not work had he just says, I am Iron Man, cut to the comic book looking character thing, and then it ends. It would not work. It would not have the same effect. What makes that scene work, in my opinion, is he says, I am Iron Man, and then immediately all of these reporters stand up and they're like freaking out. Then it ends.
That
to me is like, that is perfect. Perfectly, a perfect ending to that movie. And I love that pick. Love it.
Yeah.
That was a scene that for me, while I did enjoy the Christopher Nolan Batman series before that, and a little bit of the Spider-Man, you know, the first Spider-Man movie, 2000, 2001. For the most part, I was going through I don't like comic book movies phase at that point when Iron Man came out. And so when it got to that scene, from that point forward, I was a Marvel fan. At least whatever was going to come after, it had my attention. So yeah, it's definitely an iconic moment, I'd say.
Very nice. Well spoken. I remember I've had this conversation with you before, Ethan, about how you have said there was a time period where you didn't like comic movies. And honestly, I remember having this conversation with whenever I was 18 or 16, 17. I'm like, I still don't like comic book movies. I don't like them. I don't think they're good, whatever. And then you were like, well hold on. You know, what about, and I'm like, Batman doesn't count. Like, it's not so flamboyant with its delivery. You know what I mean? But now, thank God that we became friends, because I think not long after that, like maybe that night, you're like, okay, dude, let's watch Iron Man 3. I think maybe that night or like later on, you know, and I got to say, like, that piqued my interest. And of course, you know, Austin, around the time he was like kind of talking to me about the Infinity Stones, I'm like, what are the Infinity Stones? Like, what does it matter? Who cares? You know, but that just goes to show at the time period, I didn't know anything about anything. So,
yeah,
you know,
you were a little slow to the party.
Yeah, I was a little slow to the party, but thank God that I showed up because I love it now. Yeah. My number four, and this is, I think, right on brand with me as a person. There's a franchise of movies that we're going through right now, and it is a saga. And honestly, this to me, it just felt right. It feels like a perfect number four for me, and that is the ending to the Fast and the Furious, the very first movie.
No.
Is that one of your picks, Mikey?
Yeah.
To me, that moment where Vin Diesel is explaining to you, or Dom Toretto is explaining to you, how he lives his life a quarter mile at a time. He's just trying to take it day by day, like the rest of us. You know, it's a very short period of time. He has to make those decisions, just do the best he can with what he has. And then we have this dope drag race, and that with both of those dope cars, and like the true rivalry of those two characters is really birthed at that point. It's just a dope scene. It gets my adrenaline going. It's so 2001 and cheesy and good. And every time I watch that scene, like whenever he turns to, like they're looking at each other, I think Dom like turns to Brian, and like there's like slow-mo, like really bad slow-mo, like 2001 slow-mo around his face. But it still gets me. It just goes to show how big of an effect characters can have on you. And, you know, he ends up living because they both miss the train, but he crashes into a different car and just barely makes it, you know, I mean, he survives. But just that whole moment, I love it. It's a big moment for movies, honestly, right there for me. So, Mikey, what number was that on your list by chance?
That was my next one. That was my number three.
Nice.
I have a backup though, I think.
Okay, good. Right. Good.
I just want to make a comment on that. I've appreciated listening to you guys talking about that on the podcast, The Wannabe Critic, through your Fast and Furious rewatch there. I'm glad you guys appreciate the cheesiness of it, because it was cheesy in 2001 when it came out. So much so that I failed to take the rest of the series seriously. And I guess you still don't take it seriously, but I stopped paying attention to it after the second one. And, you know, listening to you guys talk about it has actually made me want to go back and review those movies. Just to kind of revisit them, knowing what I'm going to get into to begin with, instead of being sideswiped by it.
Totally. Yeah. And that's the way to watch those movies, to be honest. And, you know, today we just recorded our Tokyo Drift episode today. If you walk into those movies expecting to take them seriously, you're going to be let down every single time, because it is designed literally to make you go, that is so ridiculous. That's what it is. That's literally why it's there. And with each iteration that keeps coming, that doesn't fail to make me go, this is ridiculous. But there's always something in the movie that just puts a huge smile on my face, and it makes you feel something. So I'll have to talk to the other host, but we'd love to have you on for the next episode if you'd be down, if you can get caught up. So
we'll see what happens.
May see what after happens. But
because I think after Tokyo Drift, I have not seen 4 and 5. And then I picked it up with 6 and 7.
Oh.
And then I didn't watch.
Mistake. Mistake.
Okay. Those were, Well,
this will be my chance to correct it. So
there you go. Very good. So, gentlemen, I just want to let you know, let's go ahead and go with our number three picks here. And then let's just take a short break after that. All right. So, Ethan. We're back around to you. Number three.
Well, since the Neo stops bullets has already been taken, I'm going to go to a backup. And you know what? I'm going back to the well of the 1960s for this one. And it's going to be when Bowman murders Hal in 2001.
Oh,
that is a psychotic scene. And the sound engineering for that scene makes it uncomfortable. And yeah, it's an AI, it's a robot, but it's an AI that has already killed people. And so now you have the human in the AI room pulling the chips out, and they're just bouncing around the room, floating in zero G. And Hal is talking to Bowman, pleading with him,
stop,
don't do that. Yeah. Stop this. And then as he regresses and, you know, the things that make him work start to break down, and he starts singing that Daisy song. It's just it's a chilling scene. And I wrote it down because I was going to mention it just as an honorable mention. I'm glad you took the Neo scene from Matrix, because this allows me to put it in my number three slot.
No, I'm glad you did. And that's honestly, I can't say this enough. I watched that movie the first time with you. And from that point on, I was like, this is the greatest sci-fi movie ever made. And honestly, in a lot of ways, I still think it is like the godfather of modern sci-fi as we see it today. There are so many things that are ripped right out of that movie, even with something like Interstellar. I mean, that is like a modern 2001 in so many ways.
If I can interrupt, the interesting thing about watching that movie for, I would say, folks from your generation, is watching that movie is a bit like climbing Mount Everest. It can be a challenge because of the way the movie's made and the way the movie is paced. It is of a different time. It is from the past. But if you go all the way through it, the payoff is incredible.
Absolutely. I 100% agree. Mike, have you ever seen 2001? Ooh, that might have to be one that we do another episode on.
I've always wanted to watch it, but I always felt like that's a movie I need to watch with somebody. And so I'm like, what's happening?
Yeah. It's a tough one to sit through just sitting by yourself.
Mm-hmm. That's what I've heard. That's why I've never given it a try.
Yeah. It might be kind of cool, especially if COVID keeps it up. We might have to schedule this, rent it, screen share, and commentate on what we're seeing.
That'd be cool.
That might be kind of cool.
That'd be
I don't
a
know.
Long one.
That yeah, that'd be a long one. That'd be a long two-parter. One. That's okay. I love that pick though, Ethan. That's righteous because it is, from what I remember of it, AI freaks me out in general, you know, and AI has made its way as a character in a lot of movies, shows, video games nowadays, and even a game I'm playing right now. There is basically a colony of robots called synths, and they look and talk like humans. So you kind of have to make the distinction that they're not a human, you know. Don't quit letting your emotions play into this. Whereas HAL is more of like HAL is more of an idea, you know, that technology is taking over. And I love that because it's still does that same thing of playing on human emotions. You hear someone talking at you. He's like, stop, please, like, don't. And it is awesome movie. So we will definitely have to do something with that at some point or another. Mikey, what's your number three, bro?
Okay, so I had to replace my original number three. So this is actually still a pretty good one to me. It's more visually rather than what's going on, even though what's going on in it is intense. But in Batman Begins, when Scarecrow poisons Rachel and he's just carrying her down a hallway and then puts that trigger and throws it, and all those bats just come up, and that is such an iconic, like, Batman in my mind. When I think of Batman, I think of that scene because it just looks so awesome.
It looks like they ripped it right out of a comic book.
Exactly. Yeah. I love that scene. Love that whole movie. But that scene in particular, that's one of the like, that's Batman for sure.
I totally love that scene. Go ahead.
That's one of those scenes where the movie felt like it was really paying homage to the comic book that it came from.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a great scene for that.
It's Batman, Nolan's Batman movies. It's funny that he's been mentioned on this list, on this video, this podcast twice. Nolan's take on Batman is so authentic and good, but it fits right in. It feels like any of those movies could have been made into, you know, their own comic graphic novels. And honestly, without those movies, there's a lot of comics that I don't know I would have appreciated as much had these movies not existed. I feel like anything that Scott Snyder has touched and Greg Capullo, that duo, the Court of Owls, the City of Owls, Death of the Family, all of that feels like Nolan could have had a part in doing that is what those feel like.
Man.
And those are just such good stories. And that moment to me, I've always thought this is ripped right out of a comic book. Well done. Well, yeah. So well done. Very nice pick. Very nice pick. Maestri, do you have anything to say?
I did.
Okay.
We're good.
Dope. Well, my number three, I'm going to paint the picture for you again. It's pouring rain. It's pouring rain. It's pouring rain, but you're in a SUV, a Jeep, and you still, it's raining outside. It's a little ominous, but you still feel safe. You know, you're in a Jeep. A Jeep can do a lot of things. And you're like, oh, I'm kind of thirsty. I'm going to take a drink of water. And then you see your water is pulsing, but you're not moving the car. And then a freaking T-Rex shows up and ruins your night. You're not safe anymore. So my number three is ripped out of Jurassic Park, the T-Rex scene.
Yes.
That is, I can't imagine being in the theater watching that happen. And not for the first time, not knowing. I mean, I remember being a little kid and that movie freaking me out. Talk about bad CGI with a lot of stuff, especially like before it was remastered, like the original VHS tape. It's like, holy crap. You know, like it's a little hard to watch, whatever. But that scene to me will always be one of the most iconic scenes ever. And I think that's Jurassic Park isn't really one of those movies that I revisit all the time, but I'd be lying if I didn't say that's one of my favorite moments, because the subtlety of the water pulsing, it's like subtle, then boom, you know, you're hit with the T-Rex. And it's just an awesome moment for movies, in my opinion.
You know, there's something about that pick that you've just made there that it strikes me as, you know, we've talked a lot about how in some of these scenes where it mimics the comic books that these scenes came from. And I was just now looking for it. I don't have it right away where I can spot it. I have the four comic run of the Jurassic Park movie adaptation. And that's the middle of the first book, a two-page color spread of that T-Rex roaring with the Ford Explorer in the foreground and the kids screaming inside and everything. And that was one of those moments where even the comic book couldn't do justice to what we got from Steven Spielberg on screen. And you're absolutely right. That is just a brilliant scene. It makes me want to run to the toilet every time I see it.
Yeah. That poor guy. Yeah. That poor guy. I mean, he got his gerb taken, pretty much, is what happened. They took his gerb. He got eight. Oh my God. But, and honestly, talk about a moment where characters really come together. You have, again, a very subtle character, Jeff Goldblum, mixed with, you know, Laura Dern's character and Malcolm, whatever. Laura Dern was doing something else. It was
gone.
Yeah, she's gone at that point. But Jeff Goldblum and what's that?
It's just him and Sam. Is it Sam Neill?
Yes.
Yeah.
And just their camaraderie and their dynamic is just awesome. It's an awesome scene. I love it. I love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Well, we're over halfway through our list, gentlemen. And I don't know about you, but I got to pee. So I'm going to go. We're just going to take a little break and then we'll be back. And we're back. So we are now at our number two pick. I believe I had the last one. Ethan, back to you, my guy.
Back to me. Okay. All right. We're coming forward in time.
Thank God.
I'm leaving the 60s. We're going to the 70s.
Oh, okay.
So what I've picked here for my number two, and this one is one that personally has always, it's another one of those. It's another one of those that makes the hair stand up on the back of your neck. So what I've got picked here is the actor Robert Shaw playing Quint in the movie Jaws.
Mm-hmm.
When he recounts his time in the water after the sinking of the USS Indianapolis, Roy Scheider and Richard Dreyfuss are playing opposite Robert Shaw in this scene. And just the look on their faces, they are just enthralled with everything that he has to say here. And for a moment, Quint is putting you there in that moment where he's in the water with all the sharks around him and all of the his buddies around him that are dying and everything. And it's a more frightening story than the 25-foot shark that's right outside the hull of their boat. In fact, in my mind, I've always thought that the shark is probably outside listening at that moment and thinking, I'm just going to wait till tomorrow to mess with this guy. So that's how I've always viewed that scene. But that retelling of the sinking of the Indianapolis in Jaws, that's perfect.
Yeah. That, because you totally buy it, you know, and he sells that character. And it's funny, you know, Spielberg, two picks in a row, you know, and that just kind of goes to show like the dynamic range that these directors have. You know, we had Nolan twice, we've had Spielberg twice, and of course they are a couple of the heavy hitters, you know, so to speak. So very nice pick. I was wondering if Jaws might make the list in some way, shape, or form, and it totally did. So
yep.
Mikey, throwing it to you, bro.
I wanted to do my Quint impersonation so bad, but I didn't want to interrupt him.
Do it now.
Want to hear it too.
Oh man, I'm okay. You ever seen a dog's eyes, Chief? They're like shark's eyes are like a dog's eyes, all dark and lifeless. Like, I love that. That's more pirate than Quint, but yeah, that's
it's a little bit of
respect.
Yeah, a little bit of Blackbeard in there.
Yeah, that's what I was. Yeah,
very nice.
Well, I was thinking about Pirates of the Caribbean, so, but nice. Which is not my pick for my second one, actually. My second one is The Air Got to It. Castaway when he's trying to start a fire. That is the most sad and amazing scene because he's trying so hard, and then he finally gets a fire, and then it cuts to him where he's just like the god of the earth on that island like a year later. I forget how long it is, but
yeah,
I love that scene so much.
You have
created fire.
you are blowing me away with your picks, honestly.
I applaud that, honestly. That is that is an annual movie for me to watch, is the Castaway.
Great movie.
It was hard. I thought about the scene where Wilson floats away.
Oh man, yeah.
But, you know, I thanks for bringing that one in.
That's definitely a good honorable mention, honestly. And I didn't think of any honorable mentions because there's so many moments, but that's definitely a good one for me would be that moment, especially since you have quoted that like our entire life. The air got to it.
My kid. I love that scene.
it's funny, but in a sad way. Like, you know, because you're just watching this guy struggle, you know, and it's kind of funny because he's fat. And, like, he's definitely gotten used to these delicacies, I guess, so to speak, of just living, like, an American lifestyle. Yep. And just seeing him struggle, it's kind of like, you know. But at the same time, that's a good pick.
I just want to say that's a great pick for what we're going through right now because we all kind of feel a little isolated at the moment.
Right.
And isn't that such a great movie for Tom Hanks' performance to make you feel the isolation that he's going through.
Mm-hmm.
And the air got to it. That's just such a great, I would love to know if that was in the script or if that was just him ad-libbing it, because it really was a brilliant line to just drop right there. That was,
Well, and supposedly he's like really good at ad-libbing from things I've read. Like there's things in Captain Phillips I've heard of him, like basically like the, I don't know if you guys have seen Captain Phillips, but the end of Captain Phillips, he's like basically they're telling him it's going to be okay and all this stuff. And he just like kind of loses it. That feels like a genuine reaction and moment. It was almost like, okay, we have one take to get this right, you know? And that's almost like the type of moment that, but Tom Hanks is just that kind of character, that kind of guy that can bring depth to a character like that. And he makes us laugh. He makes us, you know, he makes us feel stuff. And that's a really good scene.
And thank goodness he recovered from COVID-19 because Tom Hanks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Treasure. So.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. Talk about freaking Woody. If Woody was gone.
Could you imagine?
I don't know. I don't know if I could. All right. My number two. Come to the good old hosty host. My number two is, I'm not going to paint the picture for you. All I'm going to say is that a dude gets his hand chopped off and he learns who his dad is.
Oh my.
And for me, it's Empire Strikes Back. Whenever that whole interchange between Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker and his hand gets cut off, he's holding his hand out to him. The Darth Vader's holding his hand out to him, telling him to join him. The Bespin's, you know, pit, basically that, just that iconic shot there. That was honestly, I was like, well, that's my number one easily, but there's something that tops that, but that does definitely is a very important moment, for me, you know, just as a movie lover. So that's in my top five. That's my number two pick. So
that's a great pick, Gabe. And you know, I like Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
Nay, love Empire Strikes Back. Can I explain to you my reason for not picking that scene in this list?
Go for it.
Because I feel like you touched on it just a few moments ago when we were talking. We've grown up with that scene. We know it. We love it. It has a huge... It's the pivot point for that whole trilogy, right? It's. I didn't pick that scene for the same reason that M. Night Shyamalan movies don't have a whole lot of rewatch value unless you just really love the characters that are in the film. Because once you know that, once you've grown up with it, in my mind, it was kind of hard for me to go, well, that's a given. That's going to be on anybody's list.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that you have picked it here because it absolutely deserves to be on every list that is uttered like this.
Totally. And I figured I almost banked on you guys not picking it, to be honest. So that's, I was like, I feel like it has to be on one of our lists. And to me, it's, I mean, there's a couple of scenes from that movie that are in like my top five favorite scenes of all time. And like, that is one of those scenes. It's one, it's not just one of my favorite blockbuster moments. It's one of my favorite scenes ever. Yeah. So it had to make my list.
I did put it on my honorable mention list.
Okay.
Just because it had to show up at some point.
Fair play. Fair play. Very good. Well, I can't believe it, but we've already come around to picking our number ones.
Yeah.
It flies by. I could talk about this all night. We should have done a top 10.
Our honorable mention should be another episode.
It totally should.
Five's a good list. Five's good. That's enough hard work for me.
Yeah. Yep. There you go. There you go. Well, Ethan, we're going to throw it to you. Go for it.
Is it me? Okay. So we're going to go with a little known movie from 1996. Starred Bill Pullman, amongst others. And it's his speech, Bill Pullman's speech, as he's playing President Whitmore in Independence Day. Look, it's the moment is one of those cheesy, rah-rah, let's go get him moments. But when he's giving that speech before they all climb in their fighters and go after the big ship at the end there, darn if I don't feel a swell of, you know, pride and ready to go fight anything in that moment. Is that there again, the soundtrack is building to that moment, and Pullman ramps up his dialogue and he, you know, wraps it up with that epic, "We will not go quietly into the night. We will not vanish without a fight." And I mean, it's just, it has you ready for the next 50 minutes of unbelievable action that's going to come after that.
Oh yeah.
And Independence Day is a standout favorite from my teenage years. I absolutely love that movie. And that speech in that moment in that film, I'm very proud to make it my number one pick here, if only just for nostalgia.
That's a very good pick, because it is that it belongs for sure. I don't think any of these picks have not belonged. We've covered a very wide array of genres and styles of directing, storytelling. And honestly, if you don't have you say it's a little bit cheesy. It is. It's a little cheesy. Whatever. But still, it kind of goes back to the Fast and the Furious thing. Like, for whatever reason, it makes you feel something. And that's the whole point. So done.
If somebody in the comments wants to fight me on my pick, let me know so I can comment back.
I will. I'll direct them. I'll send you a screen cap. You.
Yeah, I will fight
you. Yeah, I will fight you and I will lose. No, I'm just kidding. I'm sorry. That was mean. That was uncalled for. I'm sorry. No. Very good. I like that pick. I love it. See, this is why you got to have people from like different generations be on stuff like this, is because you have another flavor of cinema history and like viewpoints coming to the fold, because yes, you've experienced things that we've experienced, Mikey and I, but at the same time, you've experienced a lot of things and things have meant more to you that we're aware of, that we have seen, but we weren't in the moment, you know? And I think that there is a certain factor, you get imprinted whenever you're in the moment, whenever something has hype. And that just goes to show with your picks, you know, with a couple of these picks that you've made. It's awesome. So very nice. Mikey, you're number one, bro.
Man, my number one, I feel like this movie, you could pick so many different scenes out of that. You could be like, oh yeah, that was one of the biggest scenes of all time. But for me, the first 5 to 10 minutes of Avatar is one of my favorite cinematic experiences of all time. And it's probably the movie I've watched the most out of any movie ever. So I know, it's like the biggest movie of all time, but just his voiceover work while they're just playing, they're not even having dialogue for most of the first part of that movie. It's just him saying what's happened, what's going on. And then when those drums and that music kicks in, when he feels like he's flying and it just stops, and then it just keeps going into the movie. Love that. I love that movie so much. But that whole first part is amazing.
That seems right on brand for you, Mikey, honestly. And I love that you put that on your list, because that is it's a very good appetite whetter, because it's so bombastic and like good.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not even like the craziest part of the movie.
No.
But it's still so odd. Like the act, the delivery, the direction, the way it looks, the way it makes you feel, everything about that is a really great way to get you sucked into that movie.
Yep.
So and up to this point, we had never really seen anything like Avatar before. You know,
exactly.
So, yeah. And that just goes to show why it was the king for so long, is because it did have so many good things. Can you guys believe Avatar came out like 10 years ago?
That's crazy.
This will make 11 years this year.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Can I ask you something, Mikey?
Yeah.
Did you experience that in 3D in the theaters? Is that how you watched it?
I was with Gabe. I don't remember. Did we watch it in 3D?
Nope.
I don't think we did.
We went to this little rinky dink.
Awful theater.
Horrible theater.
Awful theater.
Horrible.
Best movie experience of my life.
Mikey walked out of the movie like, dude, that was so freaking awesome. Like,
it was amazing.
Have you ever watched it in 3D? Like,
I don't think I have.
Really?
I don't think I have. I never got the chance.
I was going to say, if you've seen it, you must be a cheap date. For not having experienced it in 3D. I haven't experienced it in 3D, and for that reason, I think it kind of drops down my list as far as cinematic experiences.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's interesting. I'm glad to hear it. Glad to hear it make the list.
All right, my Especially,
we're getting sequels now.
Yeah, no kidding. Man. How big's your TV? So yeah, I'm so stoked. I can't wait. And this is. Honestly, there's a part of me that James Cameron might have felt like, no, we're not putting these movies out while Marvel movies still exist. Like,
yeah,
because who wants to compete with that? But Maestro, can I ask you, how big's your TV?
70.
Okay. Do you have Blu-ray? You obviously have 4K.
No, I do not have 4K.
Okay.
That is my next upgrade.
Okay. I'm going to need you to go ahead and buy a new TV. Go ahead and buy. Do you have a surround sound?
Yes, I do.
Okay, I'm gonna need you to go ahead and buy Avatar in 4K.
It's on Disney Plus.
Great,
yeah, it is.
Right now.
I'm gonna need you to go ahead. Really good too. I'm gonna need you to go ahead and rewatch Avatar as soon as possible on your 70-inch TV, because I guarantee you, I saw that movie like 5 times in theaters.
Yeah,
the experience is not reliant on 3D.
No, not at all.
Maybe I just missed something. And it has been a while since I've watched the film. So, yeah.
That movie, here's the deal. Here's why you don't like it. I'm going to tell you why.
No. I'm not saying I don't like it. It's just it didn't have the impact that it sounds like it had on Mikey.
Here's why. It was so blown out of proportion with its hype.
The hype was insane. I thought it was going to be an awful movie because... if you see people wearing t-shirts of a movie before it's even out,
yeah,
I'm immediately turned off from that movie. But that's I think that's why it caught me off guard so much when I first watched it, because I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah. When I remember I was a freshman in high school, and it was a very weird time for me, but I remember people being mad, adults being mad because it was so hyped. And I think for people like me and Mikey's age who just didn't really even comprehend what hype even was at that point, because you're fresh out, you know, you're out of middle school, coming into high school, you don't really have access at this point in time. You don't really have access to a lot of things that most adults had access to as far as the internet is concerned. You know, we had smartphones, but it didn't really do the stuff that you could get on your desktop. You know, we weren't really linked into the news like we are now. So I think that might have not soured your experience, but maybe have kind of deflated some of your expectations, or maybe even some of your enjoyment out of the movie, because the media was just throwing it at the, you know, just like throwing it everywhere, like biggest movie of all time, whatever, you know. So I don't know.
And I have been thinking about this a lot lately, in the fact that the Avatar sequels now are coming at a time when they're coming. Marvel has hit its crescendo. Star Wars, the new trilogy is done for now. And we're not really expecting anything anywhere soon. So maybe this really is a great time to cleanse the palate, re-experience that movie, and then maybe get hyped for the next big thing.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, I think Avatar is one of those movies too, where it's right up there with your Star Wars. It's right up there with your biggest franchises of all time. It took 22 Marvel movies to dethrone that movie.
Yeah.
For being the best, the movie that's made the most money of all time. I can't agree with that. What's that?
I mean, it was dethroned with I Am Iron Man. I mean, that's honestly.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Which made our list, so, yeah. You know.
Well, no, I mean, as far as money, like the amount of money it made.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like top grossing.
Huge blockbuster, yeah.
Yeah. But, no, I think that there's a lot of deeper messages within that movie, and everything about that movie is good. There's not very many bad things. There's not many things wrong with that movie. So, I love that pick, Mikey. Very good.
Yep.
But, every king must be dethroned at one point or another, which is why my number one pick comes from a little movie called Avengers Endgame.
Oh, Lord.
The top grossing movie of all time. There's a moment when one of our heroes, Thor, you might have heard of him. He's the God of Thunder. It looks like he's about to die. He's been dual wielding his hammer and his axe at the same time. And then out of nowhere, we see Mjolnir move, and freaking Captain America, a mere mortal, kicks some major butt with Mjolnir. And you just see Thor goes, "I knew it." That moment is the whole reason this video is even happening. Because I woke up first thing yesterday morning, or maybe this morning, I can't remember, my days are bleeding together. Someone said, "This is the greatest cinematic moment of all time. Blockbuster moment of all time." And I thought, is it though? And I really thought hard. And for me personally, I don't think that there's ever been a moment. There's one that comes close, and maybe this is my honorable mention, my only honorable mention, that almost took this top spot. And that's whenever Thor drops in with the new axe in Infinity War. And the Avengers theme plays, and he's with Groot and Rocket, and he's like, "Bring me Thanos!" Like, to me, those two moments of that happening, both of those moments, I mean, you could almost call it a tie. No other moment has ever made my hair stand up as much. Like, I'm getting goosies right now just thinking about it. So, that is, and you could have taken so many moments from the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but as far as, you know, I think the Marvel Cinematic Universe, everything that's ever put out, those are like quintessential blockbusters. And that moment, the very end of that whole thing, whenever Cap picks up the hammer and then they just start going to town on Thanos, I love it. It's my favorite blockbuster moment of all time, and I think it rightly deserves to be on this list, in my opinion.
Well, Gabe, I'm going to interject here and just say, when you asked me if I wanted to come on this show, and I asked, well, what's the premise, and you explained what this premise was going to be, the first thought in my head was, Endgame's going to show up somewhere. And then it became, am I going to pick one of my favorite scenes from Endgame? Because there's four for me. You've mentioned two of them. The others are when the Avengers assemble. You know, the portals open and they all come through at once. It's like, oh my, this is, it's almost too much. And then, spoiler alert, which honestly, why are you listening if you haven't watched Endgame all the way through?
Yeah.
When Stark dies, I mean, that moment is, it's powerful. It's extremely powerful. And so, yeah, it was like, what scene am I going to pick from Endgame to put in this list? I'm glad somebody else picked it. Just like I'm glad Empire got picked as well.
Yeah.
Because I had to separate and go look in other places too.
Which, and I'm glad you did, because it would have been really sad if we would have had three or four of the same picks, you know. And honestly,
I'm surprised we had a mind meld moment with the whole Matrix thing.
Well, and that just goes to show how alike we are in a lot of ways, Ethan. We're like yin and yang.
Let's not talk about
yin and yang, and at some point we meet in the middle, and it's great. And maybe that's what Matrix is for us. No, I love Endgame. I think it's for sure the best Marvel movie, hands down. There's so many good moments in it. But Endgame and Infinity War, to me, are really like the pinnacle of good storytelling as far as Marvel is concerned. do I think those movies are good standalones? Infinity War and Endgame together, not really. I mean, they're okay. I feel like you could watch Infinity War and enjoy it, not have any idea what's going on. But I don't think you could watch Endgame and really enjoy it to the way it's meant to be enjoyed, you know, without have gone through the entire saga, which is why me and Emma, you know, Emma hadn't seen a lot of these movies, and she's like, oh my God, I want to watch this. I'm like, well, we're going to podcast about it then, because it's good. It's good TV. It's good radio.
Can I ask you guys, when you think about going back and watching Infinity War and Endgame, and most of us are probably going to try and time it out so that we can watch them back to back when we go back and watch them, do you feel like there's an element of PTSD that comes with those two movies?
For sure. Like, knowing, yes. I totally feel that, because you have literally, I mean, it's okay. This is going to sound weird. For whatever reason, for the past 5, 6, 7, 8 years, I like to rewatch like the first 4 or 5 seasons of The Office, because they're like old friends. And there's just something about the finality of Infinity War and Endgame. You feel like you've really lost some friends. You feel like you've lost parts of your childhood, almost. It's kind of what it feels like. And just knowing that it's over, this is it, you're not going to get any more Tony Stark. You're not going to get any more Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark. You're not getting any more Chris Evans as Iron Man. Yeah, it's totally, it's sad. You know, it's a sad feeling.
He's Cap, right? Mikey, did you catch that too?
Yeah.
I thought so. Oh, yeah, okay.
What did I say? Wait, what you guys were, what did I say?
Chris Evans is Iron Man.
Oh, Chris Evans is Captain America. I meant Captain America. You know what I meant. Whatever.
And so does the rest of YouTube. So.
Yeah, exactly. This is a good time to check and make sure the audio is still going. Yep, it is. Okay.
I'm just going to edit that out.
Yeah. What about you, Mikey? That's a good question. Do you feel like a sense of PTSD after Infinity War and Endgame?
You know, like, I don't think of it as like a PTSD. I think of it as a good conclusion, because the I Am Iron Man is in my top 5 favorite moments, and it's not even the one from Endgame. So having that be the end and seeing a character that he was born to play, and pretty much everybody in there, with exception of a couple, was like, you couldn't imagine them playing a different character. I think it's a good ending, and I actually started to go back through them a while ago, and I haven't finished them yet, but I'll probably go through them several times over the course of a couple years. Cause it's just a great arc. Like, it feels like you're reading like a really long, really good comic book, with an exception to a few movies. But for the most part, I wouldn't say anything like that. More like, just like anticipation of those two movies, Infinity War and Endgame, put together, because it's such a crazy rap. I love it. But
that just lets me know a little something about you, Mikey. You're a little bit dead inside.
Yeah. You? Well, yeah. I think I know where you're going with this, Maestri. These aren't stories. These are experiences.
Yeah.
And the experience isn't necessarily the movie. The experience is it being not only the talk around the water cooler, the talk amongst everybody, spanning multiple generations of kids, being able, like a 16-year-old Gabe being able to talk to Ethan and being able to talk to Doug, you know, and being able to talk to all these different people who get it and who are experiencing these things.
Yeah.
There hasn't been a saga since Star Wars, really, that's sparked so much controversy and sparked so much unity at the same time. Yeah, so it's a good conclusion. You're inevitably going to feel some sadness, because you're like, man, it'd be dope if they came back. But I was watching this thing as a Howard Stern interview, and which I don't, you know, Howard Stern, he can get kind of raunchy sometimes, but God bless that man, because he comes up with some really good material for his hosts. And I mean, if you want to learn how to become a good interviewer, there's a handful of things you can watch from him that will teach you pretty much exactly what you need to know. And he was interviewing Hugh Jackman, and he basically said, you know, what is this really the end for you? you know, he's like, you know, and Hugh Jackman said, yeah, you know, I don't want to be, I'm not going to be Wolverine anymore. He's like, so you're really done. Well, why? And just because Howard Stern has the platform he has, Hugh Jackman was able to open up and be like, you know, whenever you have something left, it was after Endgame had come out. He said that Robert Downey Jr. talked to me. He says, once you have something left that you know you can give, don't ever fully empty the tank. And because whatever you have left is what's going to throw you into your next project. And to me, that honestly helped me kind of come to grips with the fact that we probably won't ever see Robert Downey Jr. again in a Marvel movie because he wants to do other things. And even though these stories have such a big impact on us as people, I really think that ultimately it's has to, you know, you have to kind of be brought back down to realize these are stories. These are meant. And yes, even though we had experiences with these stories, these aren't real life. These are the types of things that, since it's making us feel something in the moment, you can almost make sure that you take a mental note of that and hold on to whatever you're feeling of that, because someday, you know, Mikey and I, we might have kids someday. We want to be able to share these experiences, you know, with people. Or I do, at least. Every single one of these moments on my list, I hope I get to experience with my kids someday, because yeah, they mean something to me, you know. And I think that's ultimately, like with any story, it's supposed to mean something. So even though I am sad, I do feel a sense of like longing for more, a sense of PTSD, whatever. I think it's totally fine to be able to say goodbye to a character every now and then.
Yeah. No, that's great.
So anyways, but man, I wish we could keep this conversation going. Did you guys have any honorable mentions that you had listed?
I had two more. Well, no, I've already mentioned two of them. I had to go to Space Odyssey for one of my picks. Empire Strikes Back, obviously. The last one that I had written down was the revealing of the USS Enterprise in Star Trek The Motion Picture. That, to me, from the time I was a kid till now, is a moment where you see Kirk looking at the front of the Enterprise in the space dock. And the music, the Jerry Goldsmith soundtrack, hits at the moment when the ship is revealed in full profile. And it's just, ugh, to this day, I can watch that over and over and over. And it's amazing. That's another honorable mention for me.
Very nice. Very on brand for you, Maestri. Mikey, you got anything else?
Man, I have several, but I don't want to mention them all because they're actually Tom Hanks related now that I look at them. One was like Forrest Gump, and the other one was, what was the other one? Oh man, I don't even Money Pit. But that wasn't really a blockbuster. But I think one of my honorable mentions is probably from the first Pirates of the Caribbean, when Jack Sparrow's rolling into the dock and there's nothing of the boat left except the tip and the flag and one step and he's just in town. Yep. With nothing on him but the clothes on his back.
No worries yeah. Whatsoever.
Love that.
I love that too. It's a shame, man. That franchise really fell apart.
I know, man.
It's really sad. It makes me sad because the first movie is awesome.
Yep.
The second movie is good, really good. The third movie is not. It's just not good. And like, there's just a lot wrong with it. And the fourth movie, I won't even talk about because it's not Pirates of the Caribbean. It's just not.
Yeah. No.
But
I quit after two. I have still not seen the third and fourth movies.
Yeah. Good man. The third one is.
Don't watch them.
It's disappointing. Honestly,
but I'm with y'all. I thought that first movie was it was blockbuster. It was a revelation. And Johnny Depp to this day, is incredible.
Yeah. That might be his best role ever, probably, in my opinion. Yeah.
It's kind of like Iron Man.
Every role ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Very good. Mikey had actually said something off mic that I wanted to mention because it was something that I had thought about, but I just wasn't going to put it on this list. But kind of like one of the ones where I think is probably one of the, shut up Siri. I think it's probably one of the best, movie twists. I don't know if you could call it really blockbuster worthy, but I think one of the greatest movie twists of all time, spoiler alert, if you've never seen Fight Club, is realizing who Tyler Durden really is. Tyler Durden is a split personality, and realizing, coming to the realization of, holy crap, this guy's gone insane. And it's one of the coolest movie endings to a movie ever, because whenever he has come to the conclusion that he's crazy and he has fully accepted it and he like realizes who he is, he holds the, you know, Marla's hand and he says, you know, you met me at a very strange time in my life, and then off go the bombs, you know. And to this day, that movie still gives me goosebumps. I think that's a really dope ending to a movie because that movie like brainwashes you in a lot of ways. And I don't know if you guys have ever read the book, but the book it comes full circle and it totally brainwashes you. And talk about PTSD. That story will do that to you. So that was just an honorable mention for me. So, well, gentlemen, I really appreciate it. This was a good conversation. I really enjoy this. This might be my favorite podcast I've ever done, honestly. And I think honestly, having the video aspect of it really adds to the conversation, you know, because this is the type of stuff that I see all the time, you know, on the people that I watch. So I want to thank you guys for your time and I want to thank you for your picks. So, we're going to sign off here. You can always find us at geeklybiweekly1@gmail.com, as well as the Wannabe Critic on any social media platform, YouTube. Obviously you're watching it right now. We also have a podcast. There's a lot of stuff on podcasts that we talk about that don't make it to YouTube. So hopefully we'll get more of those in here. Ethan is a guest. I appreciate you making the time, man. Why don't you go ahead and give us a plug where we can find your stuff?
Hey, yeah. And thanks for having me on. This is three solid lists, and there's some movies on here that you guys talked about that I'm looking forward to going and seeing while I'm still in isolation. And if you want to reach out to me, you can find me over on geek_age on the Twitters. I do the Age of Geek podcast. We are somewhat regular there. Also have the Drive Back the Night and Andromeda series podcast. Give that one a listen as well under the Age of Geek production umbrella. And again, thanks for having me on.
No worries, man. I appreciate it. I appreciate your time. For those of you who are watching this, Ethan it's always a pleasure to have Ethan on the show because he's actually where I got my content creator start. I was a co-host of sorts on his show at, you know, I guess you could call me that. I was a regular. I wouldn't say a co-host.
I wouldn't call you that. You were a guest.
Yeah, I was a guest. I was a regular guest.
A regular guest.
Yes. A regular guest. I wasn't a co-host, but I mean, if at the time I was going back through the list. I was on there a lot.
You still show up from time to time.
I always love to get on the Age of Geek. And Mikey, we always joke around and saying that you don't matter, but obviously you do. We appreciate your input. I really appreciate you coming into the Wannabe Critic family because I've wanted you here for a long time, and it's only been recently that's really been a possibility. So I really appreciate it, man. So
thank you.
Well, we're going to sign off, ladies and gentlemen, and want to thank you again for stopping by, and we want to thank you for preparing yourselves for a plethora of hot takes and potentially unpopular opinions. I'm Gabriel Fast. This has been the Wannabe Critic.